Hello everyone, welcome to the Splashy Business Show. My name is Abdul Majid Awan and I have with me the charismatic Worth. How are you, Worth?
I'm good. It's Thursday.
It's Thursday, the 31st of October 2024 and the business world is moving so fast. Yeah. You can't even catch up. There's a lot of things happening. Most importantly, the Future Investment Initiative Conference, which is also called the Davos in the Desert Conference, which is trying to beat the actual Davos conference, that is happening in Saudi Arabia. Today is the third day. It's finally going to end. They promised nearly $30 billion in deals throughout the event. We've seen a lot of them happening. A lot of deals have come through. We've seen like ACWA Power doing four or five deals worth nearly $2-3 billion. A lot of deals are being done. Basically, that's the idea. So we're going to talk about them tomorrow. Most probably, we'll give you a whole summary of what happened at FII, the whole details, the whole summary. Just one thing that I want to mention, Elon Musk, he said that AI has a chance of 10 to 20% of going bad. Are you concerned?
It's very That's dystopian. The question. It's very dystopian, yeah. I must admit. It is.
But what does he mean by going bad? Like, does he think that actually the Terminator thing will happen, the robots will take over? Or does he think that it will cause something which we humans cannot cope with? Do you think it's robots that he's thinking about, or it's just the general implications
possibly,
that people...
Possibly, he could be possibly thinking about robots, but I also think... See, when I think of AI, I think of human intelligence. Yeah. I do think that AI is making a lot of people dumber.
Yeah, because I won't say dumber. I would give the example of a calculator. When the calculator was invented, before that, people were doing calculations in their mind or quickly on paper. But they were using it to train their brain to become quicker at calculations. But as soon as the calculator was invented, people went slow. They stopped doing mental maths and they went towards, okay, I'll take out the calculator and do this. So I think it's just that AI will give you the comfort of doing things that took long time and make them shorter, easier for you. Oh, yesterday I was watching Bill Gates' video, reminds me, random thought. He was also saying that the biggest dilemma the next generation, your generation basically, or the upcoming generation will have is AI will make so many things so easy and so quick that the problem will be what to do with the time that we have saved. So yeah, it's going to be a big question. He's like, there's going to be so many games, so many videos, so many everything coming up. You will have to decide what to do. Would you play a game? Would you spend time with family? So he is concerned more about that aspect.
I see what you mean, but like, for example, have you like ever tried advanced ChatGPT?
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane. Yeah. You know that you can go on advanced ChatGPT, you can take any Shakespeare play, you can copy paste it, and then you can tell Chat, hey, can you please write a new play in the same tone that Shakespeare used, with the same metaphors, the same use of language, and it will produce an entirely new play.
Yeah.
I think that's completely dangerous. I think it's in authenticity. We might be celebrating
that,
people.
What I've seen with ChatGPT is the computation power, the understanding of data. For example, if I give you an Excel sheet and that had like 2,000, 3,000 entries, it will take you a lot of time to read all of them, understand the data, and then produce results. With ChatGPT, the advanced one, the paid version actually, you can just drag drop your Excel sheet. You don't even have to copy paste Control C, Control V. You can just drag drop your Excel sheet and within seconds, not even minutes, within seconds, it will read all the data, understand it, and then whatever your prompt is that, talk about, maybe if it's a school data that these are the kids, they have these grades, they come from this family, singular family, like a big family, nuclear family, big family. You can put all that data and it'll give you like pinpoint things from it. So the computation power, the understanding power is so great. That is why I think it's Elon Musk is right to an extent. It won't go bad as in like, robots will take over or like it's dystopian. But I think it will make humans obsolete in some jobs. And then what will those people do?
And for the humans we're celebrating in jobs, are we celebrating their work or ChatGPT's work?
Yeah.
You need to think about that. Yeah. And also, by the way, like, for example, with because of the rise of AI, a lot of students in universities are being accused of plagiarism, which is not always the case. Because, like, for example, like a dissertation, it's meant to be perfect, right? If a dissertation is perfect nowadays, or an essay is perfect, the professor will actually more than likely think that you used AI. They don't trust human talent and capability anymore. Like, I have a friend, she went to university in Singapore, and she told me that she had a written essay exam. She wrote the essay in the exam room. They accused her of AI plagiarizing it. When she wrote it in the exam on paper, her handwriting. They said, no, this has to... It was so good, they said, no, this has to be AI generated.
Maybe you went home before the exam, like, remembered all of it and then wrote it down. Yeah, but there's a lot of, like, student-wise, education-wise, there's a lot of implications, as you said. I remember on LinkedIn, you know, there's, like, sections now from LinkedIn where you can, as an expert, they invite you to contribute to them. So I was looking at one of the threads there, and it was more about education. And a lot of people were asking, the LinkedIn question was, how do you find plagiarism in any copywriting piece, educational piece, anything written? And one guy had a very good advice, I remember. He said, always make one small mistake in whatever you write.
Oh, that's
and
what I
do. When you put it on any plagiarism checker, the plagiarism checker thinks that ChatGPT is perfect. It will never make a grammatical mistake. It will never make a typo. Yeah. So that way, just make a small minor spelling change here and there, which you know you can correct afterwards.
I do that sometimes in my university essays.
So when they upload it on the plagiarism checker, which to be honest, there is like expert consensus right now that there is no perfect AI plagiarism checker in the world right now. Turnitin, which is the biggest software, is used by all of the world's best universities to check your dissertations. Even they have said that we can't make something which checks AI perfectly. It cannot do that. It's impossible to check if this is AI, ChatGPT, Claude, any
system. But you know what actually works? There's this website. It's called Quillbot.
Yeah.
And I was just once curious. I was like, does this work? I went to ChatGPT. I took a text from it and I put it on Quillbot. And it was able to detect that it was all AI generated.
No, but see, even if you use ChatGPT, I use it a lot. Again, I told you, just to bounce off ideas, find angles. Everyone uses it now. I know one publication in the UAE, I won't name them, but they've told their reporters and writers and copy editors, everyone, to use ChatGPT because they want more output on their website. They just recently started, and one of my friends is working there, and they said they were very clear. We don't want any human touch to it. We just want the output to be great. So for copywriters, they're like, we need at least 20, 30 copies checked every day. Use AI as much as possible. So it's going there. People are getting comfortable with AI. But this is the idea.
It's so concerning.
It's concerning, but to be honest, sometimes for example, if I'm writing a stock report, I have the numbers. Stock market closes, I have the numbers.
That's
I have to
true.
Write a report about stocks. Gets really boring if you have to do every day. So I'll automate it. I'll just be like, oh, these are numbers, just write a report. ChatGPT every day will give me something new in it. As a human, I will have a limited vocabulary. I won't be able to write such a good piece, such an interesting stock market report, which is very basic, every day in some new manner. AI can do that. So you can use it to help you, not like completely remove yourself from the equation and just make it do everything, but you can use it to help you. And we talked about the video that 20 to 40%, 30% of the work, if you can automate it, you can replace someone in a position who can't. NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang said that. So yeah, we're talking about AI. Musk's thing, Elon Musk at FII8, he said there is a 10 to 20% chance that it may go bad, but he also said that AI is going to change how humans live on this planet. So that's also a big claim coming from him.
Yeah, and
everyone highlighted the 10-20 part.
In the conference, they also discussed how, you know, while there are many risks, because of the fact there's also so many benefits, they can develop like regulations to prevent it from being harmful.
Yeah.
However, and that's very vague.
See, what I read, whatever I was reading throughout the day, what I've read is a lot of people who are in the AI field, who are actually working on developing these systems, they believe that there should be a universal ethical code, or there should be a universal policy Because like social media, we see that every social media platform has its own policy. Mm. So it's a big mess. Some places you can write some words, some places you can't write some word. Twitter, very for pro freedom of speech. There's like racists there who are writing stuff. No one gets banned or something. Apart from very like illegal, very illegal.
That's why I love X though.
Yeah,
it is. You get to really see what people think.
Yeah,
you
really. But yeah. But again, see racist comments and all that. Twitter is very pro that. We saw recently when this guy Powell was arrested. He was arrested because he was not sharing Telegram data. But now he's like, okay, if criminal activity is happening, we will share data. So still, every social media is a mess right now. No one knows what's the policy, what's a universal policy for social media. Meta has its own, Google has its own. Everyone has its own policy.
You know what's really
strange? So for AI, I think there should be something.
I noticed something, like with my phone, like depending, like say I'm like in a really good mood.
Yeah.
On my TikTok, I'm going to have like a bunch of like hope aesthetic videos.
Oh.
Or like if I'm not in a good mood and like, I do like express it. I do say like, you know, this is not my best day. On my TikTok, sad videos start showing up. It all depends on my mood.
No, I think it's more about the algorithm. I'll tell you how it happens. You are sad. You see a sad video which resonates with you. You'll spend 7 seconds on it. But on that day, when you're sad, you'll spend like 3 seconds on a happy video. Now, TikTok, all these platforms, they have very pinpoint accurate. They even check your attention span for microseconds. So if you spend 5.5 seconds on 5 happy videos and 10 seconds on 5 unhappy videos, they will gauge it that you're in a bad mood and they'll show you more happy stuff or maybe the other way, sad stuff. Oh, let's resonate with him. So this guy or this girl keeps scrolling. Oh, this TikTok understands my feelings.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very pinpoint. So algorithms are very, very, very microscopic. They can judge your personality just by the way you use your platform. They can tell your buying preferences. The reason you see ads that you think are relevant to you sometimes they're actually very irrelevant, but to an extent, nearly 90% of the time, you will see stuff that you use already or are planning
especially
to
use. Especially on Instagram.
Yeah.
They're so accurate.
We can't find the algorithms. The best thing is either shut your phone down and use an analog one or just train it. My best idea would be train it. See the content that you always want to see. Just see that content. Whenever you see anything else apart from that, just scroll. So spend more time on the content that you want to see, and eventually the algorithm will understand that this guy interacts with this content, watches this content, and it'll keep suggesting you that content.
Oh,
so that's like a trick. I don't know if it will work. Works for me, works for my wife. She's very peculiar about what she will watch, what she... Even if I...
I'm the same.
Yeah.
I really am.
If I send her a reel which is not like her cup of tea, she'll be like, show it to me on your phone. I don't want to open it because then my algorithm will be like, okay, she likes these videos as well.
She's extremely aware of it.
It's just a part of her job. Like, she has to see a lot of stuff. She works in a magazine as well. So, yeah, basic understanding is see the stuff that you want to see and you'll get that stuff more and more. That's the basic trick that you can do to beat the algorithm.
And
moving on from Elon Musk and to the main story.
Just to get started on our
whenever
main
story.
Whenever
we take Musk's name, I guess you open up a whole Pandora box and you start discussing so many things because he's such a fascinating figure. Politics-wise, he's supporting Trump. He's saying so many things in the political sphere. Then comes to X, tweets every hour about something, retweets someone. Then you go to SpaceX, his startup, and you see something else he's doing. This guy is like,
he's everywhere.
Playing 3D, 4D, 5D chess in his brain every day. But good.
Yeah.
Nice, interesting guy, to be honest.
Just to get started on the topics.
Yeah.
Our first topic is going to be how Abu Dhabi's CYVN Holdings has acquired McLaren's automotive business. Essentially, very recently, they had an agreement to acquire full ownership of McLaren's automotive business and a non-controlling stake in McLaren's group. Now, this is very interesting because it's actually partnering with Bahrain's Mumtalakat, and Bahrain's Mumtalakat is actually the sovereign wealth fund of Bahrain.
It's now, like this the is amazing PIF because, for Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, we're basically seeing partnerships between these countries in the Middle East.
Middle Eastern countries.
Yeah.
And the most interesting part that I found was that Bahrain bought it recently. It's not a big acquisition like 10 years back they bought McLaren Group. They bought them recently, and as soon as they bought it, after something, now they've included CYVN Group, and it's backed by one of the sovereign wealth funds of Abu Dhabi. So that's a good part. It's two basically Middle Eastern sovereign wealth funds coming together, joining their resources, and trying to make McLaren into a big powerhouse.
It's an insane capital pool.
And since CYVN Holding is trying to go into automotive business, they will get a stake in the Formula One team as well. And Bahrain Mumtalaka, they basically own the McLaren Group, which is a big, big group. But CYVN Holding's interest is more in the automotive business, so car making, Formula One, all that. So let's see, it's a non-binding contract right now. That is the most operative word right now. Non-binding means that if they want, they can back out. But right now, they've signed a non-binding agreement. And soon, they will finalize everything and they'll work out the details. And we will know the details. And we will tell you the details. Mm. Yeah. So this is happening. Just a short story. But CYVN holds a lot of importance in the MENA region. They recently partnered with NIO, NIO. It's a Chinese EV manufacturer. They recently launched EL8, their new car in the UAE. They chose, NIO is a Chinese EV manufacturer. They chose UAE as the first country in the Middle East to launch their electric vehicles. And they, we talked about this, like 60%, I talked about this with Farah, so I remember, 60% of the EV market, the electric vehicles market, is dominated by China across the globe. So so a Chinese manufacturer, EV manufacturer, electric vehicle manufacturer coming to the Middle East and then choosing UAE. So they saw something in the country. They're like, okay, this sounds good. So yeah, CYVN is doing big things in the automotive industry. So let's keep an eye on them.
Now we're going to have more like AI actually generated in cars.
Yeah.
I think that's what's so interesting. It's funny that this is going on because I remember a few years when my father tried to convince me to study AI engineering or computer science. I remember me and my sister had this argument that one day, this job market is going to become extremely populated and we're not going to find jobs. But look at it. It's only going more. It's only booming.
It's just that every story that you read every day tells you a different story. Some days you read stories and you're like, oh, okay, AI is replacing humans. And then the other day you see a story, it says, oh, no, AI is creating more jobs. So right now we're in that transition phase from zero AI to complete AI. And in this phase, there will always be confusion. Like, change is not easy for everyone, I guess. That's being a little philosophical. Not everyone is able to accept change. But CYVN Holding is doing good in the region. NIO coming to the MENA region, Middle East region, in the UAE, launching their electric vehicles. CYVN Holdings are part of that. Now they're getting into automotive business. So, good signs for the Abu Dhabi-based CYVN Holding. They're bringing in money. That's the main important part. They're bringing in money and non-oil money. That's the good part.
Yeah.
It's not related anything to oil. It's just automotive industry.
It's funny that you say oil because our second topic is exactly about that. So Saudi Arabia, it's actually staying committed to oil. While it does have the diversification plan for 2030, at the summit, the FII summit, the Saudi Arabia's energy minister, Abdulaziz bin Salman, affirmed that the kingdom is actually committed to boosting its oil production capacity to 12.3 million barrels per day.
Yeah, we recently saw that due to the less demand of oil in the world, OPEC Plus, the organization which handles the production of oil, that we will produce this much oil for this year, and for 2025, they also, for every next year, they make a forecast that this year, for example, we needed 100 units, next year we'll need 110 or maybe 90. So OPEC has cut down the forecast. They want less oil produced because everyone is moving towards non-oil stuff, towards renewable energy, towards sustainability.
Teslas.
But Saudi Arabia is like, no, we will still keep on producing our amount, that is 12.3 million barrels per day. Because to be honest, right now the idea is they want to make as much money as possible because they need to move away from oil. It's a very difficult dilemma that they face right now.
It's like a conundrum.
Yeah. We talked about it also that they need $1 trillion NEOM project to complete, so they can have a whole hospitality tourism industry in place, which can replace the money that is coming from oil. But they need oil right now to sell it, to make the money, to make this. So it's very complicated, but him saying that they are going to maintain that level, good for the world that the oil prices will stay cheap, because obviously less production will mean that more prices, higher prices. So they will keep producing the same amount of oil. But apart from that, Saudi Arabia also has a very big sustainability policy. They're not just producing oil, but they are trying to move away from oil as well. Not talking about strictly maritime, where ships use oil, or automotive, where cars use oil. There's a lot of industries, for example, electricity generation. They're trying to go towards solars, wind farms, and all of that. So if even if they're producing oil, they're trying to limit the electricity production, all those needs, energy needs, to something else. So the shift is happening. There is a very fine balance that they've created, and they're trying to maintain it. So that's the good part.
You know, but much more than that, what was really interesting is that the minister also emphasized how them actually having a steady supply of oil is important to maintain the stable global supply.
Yeah, because they're one of the biggest producers of oil in the world. Recently, it was the Middle Eastern countries before as a whole who were the biggest producer. But recently, US found a lot of new reserves. So US has sort of become self-sustained as well. That is why the oil prices that we see are not really dependent on Middle East now. They're also dependent on Russia's production, Venezuela's production, US's production. So that is why US is quite comfortable in their place right now, that we got new oil reserves, so we're fine, we don't need oil from them. That is why the OPEC countries, they're trying to limit the production, so obviously it goes on for a longer period. So if you have 100 units throughout history remaining, they want to limit it so it goes on more. But every country that we've seen is going towards sustainable renewable energy, and that will, that we're seeing some difference. But the I guess the UN or the global climate rate of 1.5 degrees that they're trying to maintain, every year it's rising at 1.5. It's actually rising more than that. They're trying to limit it to 1.5. That was what was discussed at COP28 in Dubai, that how can we limit it to 1.5 degrees every year or every decade only. So that is the main idea behind the global move and shift towards sustainability and renewable energy. And recently I remember some Abu Dhabi firm, ADNOC, they invested in Spain renewable projects. They invested in like a lot of renewable projects in the European countries. So they're taking over that, and most probably soon they'll export that production back to their countries as well. So it's it's a nice thing that is going in the world. Greta Thunberg would be very happy, I guess, because she says that the world should move away from fossil fuels as quickly. Right now, if it was for her, she'll be like, okay, right now.
Wait, but, question, Majid, would you ever buy a Tesla?
Yeah, I would.
You would?
It's cheaper because you don't have to buy a petrol. But I would just look at the availability of charging stations. In Dubai, UAE, you see a lot of charging stations at a lot of malls, at a lot of grocery stores. There's like two at least. You go, you charge your car and move away. And in Dubai, I remember, I recently read somewhere that there's like this app that you go on and you just scan the code and you charge it for free. So if I get that kind of luxury, I would be happy with it.
I wouldn't get it.
But
though,
I wouldn't get it in my country, in the underdeveloped countries, because I know there will be no charging station. I remember when I was in Pakistan, a lot of people started buying hybrid and EV cars. So hybrid, obviously you use petrol, the battery is very expensive, so the car becomes expensive. But some of the people bought EVs, and I saw like in a city of 2 million people, not 2 million, actually 20 million, 20 million people, there was only one charging station in the city. So that was Karachi. One charging station, 20 million people. Even if like 20 people bought an EV, they would have to go to the same station, same area, far away from their home. Some people obviously would have. And they opened it in a very middle class center, not in a posh center, because obviously rich people were buying EVs. I don't know what the planning was. They didn't put it there in the posh area where everyone has an EV. They put it somewhere far away.
But see, I'd never buy one because of the battery. Apparently, the battery, because it's made from lithium, I believe, it's the fire, like if it, if it catches fire, the fire will not It will not go out. Yeah, even if you throw it in the water. It'll take a lot of time to, yeah. No, and I hear like stories of like people being locked in Teslas when they have car accidents and dying immediately because the car doors won't open. So, you know, when Musk is saying that AI feels that it's going to be scary, this is really what I think. This is very scary. Yeah, because it says
it's a fire hazard and it'll lock you inside.
Yeah, exactly. It thinks that it knows the best decision for you in your context, but it's not actually living in reality, is it?
It's living in its own code.
Yeah, I find it. I hear a lot of stories. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this is happening.
Yeah. Oil. Saudi wants to remain committed to the production of oil that they're producing right now, but they're trying to balance it with other places. They're trying to find a sustainability balance. More news from Saudi Arabia. Their localization of insulin production has taken off. Apparently, at one of the events that happened in Saudi Arabia recently, a preliminary agreement to localize insulin production in Saudi Arabia was signed at the Global Health Exhibition. The agreement includes key players such as National Unified Procurement Company, NUPCO, Sudair Pharmaceuticals, and Sanofi, with support from government authorities like the Local Content and Government Procurement Authority, LCGPA, and Government Expenditure and Projects Authority, EXPRO. The reason for naming all of them is they're all coming together in a government-private-public partnership kind of thing, and they're trying to bring 50% of the need that is of Saudi people. So if they need 100 units of insulin in Saudi, 50 will now be produced in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So that will make the price go down and easier access and better access.
Yeah, and as me and Majid previously discussed, the reason why this is so amazing, it's because insulin is extremely expensive. But it's extremely expensive, not because you're actually paying for the insulin, you're paying for the production cost. Yeah. So if it's localized and it's made in Saudi Arabia, that means that you're going to pay half the production cost. And honestly, I'm really...
So the idea of insulin, basically, the extraction, the process of making, the guy who made it, he made it completely free. So anyone can make insulin, you can make insulin, but you will sell it for the production cost that it takes. So that's the idea, that localized production throughout the world is a good idea. Obviously, we will reach it someday or the other, but every country should have a localized insulin production plant, or every big pharma that produces insulin should have a plant in their own country, suggestedly, because people who are dependent on insulin, it's very difficult for them. Again, example from Pakistan, I've seen a lot of people suffer. They would order insulin from Dubai because these are the areas that are nearest. The ordering it from other countries at like thrice or four times the price. Yeah. So just because they need insulin. So it's a big problem. It's a big problem in the US as well.
Exactly.
Because a lot of people can't afford it. A lot of people who have insurances which cover only 50% of the cost, they have to pay the 50%.
Or like extremely the copay
insurances.
Yeah.
And they're getting, the prices are going up and they're seeing a problem. They're not able to take it.
You know, I'm deeply touched that by this also, because my grandmother actually has diabetes.
Oh, yeah.
And so to see something finally being provided to all minorities, to all classes, it's really quite beautiful to see.
So a lot of things happened. Just to give you quick headlines before we sign out, we've taken a lot of time today. We're touching 30 minutes mark every day. Thanks for the good discussion, Word. Prince Khalid bin Al Walid, he's the founder of KBW Ventures in Saudi Arabia. He's a Saudi prince. That they have made 5 investments in health technology, according to Arab News. That happened at FII, the 8th edition. Barclays is exploring to return to Saudi Arabia. We touched on it a little yesterday. But the main news mainly is that the CEO said that they are coming back to Saudi Arabia after 10 years. So let's see when that happens. Saudi PIF company has led a $65 million funding round in Berlin-based chauffeur service providers, which is Blacklane. And now this Blacklane is coming to Saudi Arabia. So it's going to be a new addition in the Saudi Arabian mobility market. I think of it as a service market, because a chauffeur will come and drive you to everywhere. But it's part of a mobility market. The UAE investment firm thinks they can be Middle East Blackstone. This is first said by Shuruk Partners. They're the investors in Pripco, which is a Damag Properties in startup. They're the investor in Tabby, early investor in Tamara or Tabby. So they have invested in a lot of big startups, and they think they want to be the next Blackstone. Blackstone is one of the world's biggest investment agencies, just to give you perspective. Qatar's delivery app, Pass, they've raised $2.7 million. And Saudi platform, Arc, they've secured $1 million in pre-seed funding led by Core Investment. The funny part, the interesting part that we always talk about, Saudi platform, Arc, has received funding from their own Riyadh-based core investment. So yeah. even the investment firms in Saudi Arabia, they're investing in local startups. They're not going outside.
And again, with that, thank you so much for that. Thank you for watching, everyone. Don't forget, you can find our Smashing newsletter on Beehive. You can find our LinkedIn, Instagram, X. You can find us everywhere, so make sure to tune in.
Yeah. Have a great day. Bye.